Ralph, would you say that I'm a lucky woman?
Well, I think that... Hey, wait a minute, wait a minute. Lucky in what way?
Oh, that I have a nice home and family and... and you?
Oh, well, thank you. Now, how can I reply to that? I think you'll have to answer that question yourself.
I'm sorry, dear. I did sort of put you on a spot, didn't I? Let me put my question another way. Would you say that luck has played a part in my life?
Oh, dear, I think that luck plays a part in almost everyone's life. And strangely enough, I don't believe that many people realize it.
There are many examples, Adolf, of people who have been extremely lucky, and as you say, not realizing the part luck has played in their lives until much later.
Yes, and most people are inclined to apply the meaning to luck, to good luck, that there is also a thing called bad luck.
Well, you don't like to think about bad luck.
No, but it can happen.
Oh, yeah.
And one doesn't often realize what happens until one looks at it in retrospect. You realize your good or bad luck long after it has happened. I have one case in point which illustrates both good and bad luck. Quite a few years ago, when the talkies were quite young, there was a picture being made, I think it was in the state of Utah, called In Old Arizona. And the director of the picture was Mr. Raoul Walsh, one of our very finest directors. And he, at the same time, was playing the lead of the Cisco Kid in this particular picture. And returning from location one evening, they had a most unfortunate accident in which his face was rather badly cut, enough so that he had to leave the picture. Now, to substitute for him, they engaged a director named Mr. Irving Cummings, and to take Mr. Walsh's place as an actor, they engaged Warner Baxter, who played the Cisco Kid, made one of the greatest successes ever made in the picture business, launched him on an entirely new career, and Mr. Cummings also. And there was in the case of exceptional good luck for two and a case of bad luck for the other. Now, it just shows you how much luck plays a part in many, many people's lives.
Oh, yes, and to an even larger degree in some of the most wonderful inventions and discoveries of our time, particularly in science. You have the story of Charles Goodyear, who was trying to find a means of vulcanizing rubber, and he was having absolutely no success. He took some raw rubber, which no one seemed to feel had any particular use, and he tried all sorts of experiments with it. He finally, in desperation, mixed in some sulfur and found that was no good, and in utter disgust, he took this pan of raw rubber and he wanted to throw it out. But in going to the door, fortunately, he tripped and fell, and this pan of raw rubber went upon the stove. And he found that in scraping it off, that it was no longer just a sticky mess, that it had become firm. And he was able to make it into a ball, and the ball would bounce. And so, you see, he had learned how to vulcanize rubber quite by accident.
Only,
it was sheer luck.
Only because he tripped.
That's right.
Now, don't you think that science would have found that method later? No one knows, do they?
Well, I don't know. I suppose they would eventually. But anyway, it was luck for him at that particular moment.
Pure sheer luck. Now, let's take a case in medicine. The case of the famous Austrian doctor, Julius Wagner Joreg, I think his name was. I don't know how to pronounce it exactly. I think
that's close enough.
Wagner Joreg had a patient suffering from a brain disease. And unfortunately, the patient at the same time had contracted a typhoid fever due to an insanitary condition in the hospital. See, through the water supply, contaminated water supply. He stood by her bedside watching her die. He went home, came back in the morning, and the woman showed remarkable improvement. So the method of curing brain diseases by giving people high fevers was born through a sheer accident.
Think of it.
Those things are incredible, aren't they?
Oh, that's luck. There's no odd doubt about that.
Well,
oh, yes.
How many of us know when we're lucky and what luck means? You turn to the right and your career goes one way, you turn to the left and your career goes another.
Well, I'm sure of one thing. There's a gentleman by the name of William Banks of Brooklyn, New York, who certainly knows what luck is. He was awakened one night at a very late hour by his phone ringing, and he got up to answer the phone and found out it was a wrong number, and he was very, very angry about it, but he also noticed that as he started to go back to bed that he was very, very dizzy, and he could hardly stand up. His knees were about to give out under him, and so he was rather frightened, and he tried to call his wife, and he found out that he couldn't awaken her at all. And he went into the room of his children and found that they were so sound asleep that he couldn't awaken them either, and he was in an absolute panic. So he got on the phone, and he called the emergency hospital, and 10 minutes later, they came up and discovered that 8 members of his family were practically dead from carbon monoxide poisoning from a defective water heater. Now, if someone had not called a wrong number at that precise moment that night, what would have happened? That's luck, isn't it?
You remember the time we were in Yosemite and you got a hurry call to come back to the studio as fast as you could, and we got in the car and we tore down to make it in one day? I don't know how fast we were going over the ridge route, the most dangerous trip I've ever seen. And just as we pulled into the driveway, the rear tire blew out.
Oh, indeed I do. I had forgotten it. You're right. Incidentally, what about that hole in one that you shot in golf? Now, you know that was luck.
Oh, purest kind of luck.
I'm glad you admit that, dear.
One of my very dear friends here shot two holes in one week, and both complete flukes. He never even landed on the green. It happened to kick on and went into the hole.
But you know, the desire of people to have good luck come their way is really in all of us. I think that probably everyone carries some form or another a good luck charm, either something that he considers good luck for him, or you have the rabbit's foot, dear. Never forget that. You carry that with you all the time.
And in all this talk about luck, I think we've overlooked a man who really made luck pay off.
Oh, I guess there are many men in that category. Whom did you have in mind?
A gentleman named Horatio Alger, Jr., who always wrote about luck and whose books sold millions of copies. They were all the rage when I was a boy.
I remember hearing about those books and their author, and I'd like to hear more. But first, I think we should listen to someone else for a moment. Oh, Adolf, you were speaking about Horatio Alger, Jr., the author who wrote so many books that were avidly read by boys when you were going to school. From what I've heard, he must have been a remarkable man.
Oh, dear, not only was he remarkable, but he was also a very peculiar gentleman.
Oh?
He wrote over 135 books. They sold close to 200 million copies. And while many of his critics say they don't know why, I have an idea as to why they sold that, because they sold that many copies. Horatio Alger never grew up. He was the typical American story. He was the very example of what rags to riches meant. That's our American story today. Why the boys don't read Horatio Alger today, I do not know. His critics said that they were badly written, that the stories had great similarity. But he stimulated the imagination. He was simply wonderful. I'll never forget him. Some of the books alone, some of the titles. But first of all, I'll tell you something about him. He was born in Revere, Massachusetts in 1832, and his father was a Unitarian minister and wanted his son to become a preacher and follow in his father's footsteps. Of course, the boy Horatio Jr. Was educated at Harvard, at the Harvard Divinity School, and was duly ordained a minister. But he didn't like the work very well, and in his spare time he began to jot down stories about boys. The kind of boys whose companionship he himself had missed. So he wrote a book called Ragged Dick or Street Life in New York. It became a success, and he moved to New York.
And gave up the ministry?
Gave up the ministry and never went back to it again in his whole life, because he was a success right from the very start. Now, during his first week in New York City, he visited the Newsboys' Lodging House, which was a charitable institution at that time for homeless newsboys. Here, Alger saw tremendous material for his life's work of writing. But more than that, it was the companionship that he always longed for. Evidently, that's what the historians say, dear.
Well, you mean he was a grown man and he was associating with a little boy?
Well, yes, dear, he was a man, certainly 22, 23 years of age. Don't forget that he lived for 30 years in this lodging house and wrote all of his stories from there.
Amazing.
Isn't that incredible?
Absolutely.
Some of the stories will give you an idea as to what he meant. Paul the Peddler, Jed the Poorhouse Boy, Julius the Street Boy, Tom the Bootblack, Joe the Hotel Boy, Jerry the Luggage Boy.
Wonderful
fame,
titles, yes.
Fame and Fortune, mm-hmm. Brave and Bold, Plan and Prosper, Try and Trust, Slow and Sure.
Now, wonderful titles.
Well, I know, but there's a great lesson in every one of those books.
Oh?
You see, he wrote the story of the little boy who shined the shoes of the millionaire so perfectly beautifully that the millionaire paid attention to him and said, I'll give that boy a position in my business. So the boy is, let's say, one of his titles, Brave and Bold and Slow and Sure and Try and Trust.
Of course,
he ends up by marrying the boss's daughter.
I never read him at all. I never heard of him, only as a name, you know. But when I was a little girl, we had a series of books called Elsie Dinsmore. And I must say that as a small child, I absolutely loathed Elsie. I couldn't stand Elsie. She was a little horror as far as I was concerned, although I read all about her, because she was so good, you know. She never did anything wrong. She was absolutely perfect. She knew how to sew, and she helped her mother, and she did everything that was just noble and fine. And I thought that she was an absolute horror. Now, then you had a series of books called The Rover Boys. Do you remember those?
Yes, indeed,
yes,
I do.
Yes?
Yes, I knew the Rover Boys.
I think
Boys.
Those are still being written. I believe that the children do read those today.
As I grew a little bit older, we read Frank Merriwell, and we read Old King Brady, and we read books by G.A. Henty, books of adventure and excitement, but none of them sold the way Mr. Alger did. Not
any of them.
Well,
what finally happened to him? You mean to tell me that his books suddenly stopped selling?
Oh, dear, no. I think you could still get the Horatio Alger books today, but you see, he was an admirer of the free enterprise system. He was the great admirer of the great bankers, of the great industrialists. And he wanted to implant in every boy's mind that he could become one of those.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Not
That's
a
very
thing
nice,
in the...
isn't it? It's a lovely thought. Why not?
Not a thing in the
what
world.
What finally happened to him, personally, though?
What happened to him? Well, dear, eventually he died.
No, you don't mean it. Oh, you're dreadful.
Born in 1832, he would have been a very old man today if he hadn't. Well, when he was a little over 60 years of age, he fell in love, a hopeless love, and it broke his heart. He almost went crazy, almost lost his mind.
Oh.
Those are some of the intimate stories about it. I'm talking about what his influence meant in the literary world, if you want to call it that, although at that day they didn't call him a writer.
No, I suppose not.
Well, here we are again at the end of our time, Marie, and we'll have to say goodbye. This is Adolf Monge speaking from Beverly Hills.
And this is Marie Teasdale Monge joining my husband to thank you for having us as your guests. May we visit with you soon again?